Thank you so much for being here. Final panel, final talk. Thank you for staying strong. As some of you know, I'm more of a political theorist who worked a lot on Arendt. And this is my attempt to get away from Arendt. And I decided to do it a little bit by pairing her with someone to deeply despise, namely Sartre. I think it's up to you to decide whether or not it's, I mean, successful. It's also a great occasion to use all the photos that I accumulated over the years in Brussels. So basically what I'm concerned with today is a reflection on the streets as a public space and as a space for protest and collective action. And I want to start with two observations. First of all, there's a lot of literature nowadays, very Arendtian in kind, of course, that focuses on public space and collective action, and more specifically on assembly, as well as other forms of spontaneous and less organized protests. And such accounts of collective action, they typically attribute to the physical gathering in public spaces. More precisely, in following Hannah Arendt, this gathering actually makes the public space, right? As people physically come together in a collective practice that enacts their freedom, and then change the shared conditions on which they live. And the theoretical problematization of such gatherings typically focuses on their impossibility, the impossibility of such collective action. And then oftentimes there's a talk of the closure of public space, which obviously does not refer to the disappearance of actual streets, but the inability of public spaces to foster such kinds of collective action. So the main question is, in the words of Veronica Gago, and I quote, what does it mean to act together when the conditions for doing so have been devastated? End of quote. Now, what is not problematized in this body of literature is the very importance that is given to the simultaneous presence of multiple people in the same moment, at the same time. So this clearly applies to Arendt, right? When she writes, and I quote again, power springs up between men, people, when they act together and vanishes the moment they disperse, and of course, the moment they physically disintegrate, I mean, the group disintegrates. And this makes Arendt a very fruitful theorist of what to think about assembly and other public protests, but it also makes her vulnerable to charges of neglecting forms of collective political action that does not neatly fit the case of a physical gathering at a clearly delineated point in time. And I think it also applies, for instance, to Judith Butler, even if they articulate a critique of Arendt. Now, second observation, opening observation, is something very specific and concrete. The streets of Brussels, the city where posters, free art, other interventions in the public space abound. And from 2018 onwards, a poster appeared that stated, "Let's let me conquer, leave the girls alone." And this was addressed to an informal view, and they multiplied in the months after that. They multiplied in the sense that they did not only exhort the passersby to leave girls alone, but also to leave queers alone, to leave sex workers alone, et cetera, et cetera. And these posters themselves became part of the streets, right? Of the cityscape that is likewise constituted by sexual harassment, as well as the very many precautions that many people take when they know that they're at risk of street harassment. Female students, sex workers, were forced out on a date and holding the hand of their lover, among others. Now, these posters, they started long before COVID, right? And they stayed during COVID when everyone was confined at home, and the confinement to the public space was, of course, not a risk for a lot of people facing domestic violence. And I think like that moment, of course, makes it even more important to think about other forms of collective action that exceeds the model of a collective gathering, a physical gathering in public space. So I think these two observations, the theory on assembly on the one hand, and then the very concrete historical moment in which we live, they speak to each other, right? And they invite us, I think, to extend our phenomenological vocabulary of protests beyond bodily proximity. So in what follows, like the remaining 15 minutes, I want to find the theoretical terminology to grasp the kind of indirect gathering that comprises city life. Now, indirect gathering, that's a Sartre's term, obviously, and what follows, I want to see if and how it is useful to think about feminist interventions in the city by using his critique of dialectical reason. More specifically, I want to ask if and how these posters, the materialized product of collective action, operates on and with street harassment, if you can understand them using the concept of seriality. Now, maybe a bit of background. A few years before these posters emerged in 2012, a young Flemish filmmaker released a short documentary entitled Femme de la Rue, in which she walks down the streets of Brussels in a summer dress, recording sexist comments by men. It's a very real and legit concern with the impact of street harassment on the freedom of movement of young women was quickly taken up in the stereotypical and racist manner as the harassment of young white women by men with a migration background. And this narrative was enabled by a set of political dynamics, some of which are very specific to Belgium. For instance, the tension on the one hand, the Dutch-speaking Flemish community who lives in the north of the country and which has elected many Flemish nationalists with an anti-immigration, an anti-Muslim agenda. And on the other hand, the predominantly French-speaking city of Brussels, which is among the most diverse cities in the world and which have historically been governed by French-speaking social democrats. Now, street harassment was very quickly taken up in as a justification for state-led surveillance of migrant men. And this was particularly clear when they introduced a law, a system of defining street harassment. And this law, which was criticized by legal experts for its vagueness, had been barely used. Of the 50 times it was used in 2014, 90% of the times it was for racist, sexist comments against police officers. With this background in mind, we can now return to these posters, right? And in interviews about their action, the collective, the group, the feminist collective who put up those posters, explicitly took a stand against this right-wing narrative that states that street harassment is a problem of migration. And they systematically put up their posters in all neighborhoods, poor and rich, white and black, use these terms. And rather than targeting a specific group, they select their location by following suggestions by women and others who are harassed. So they really try to resist this insertion in a right-wing narrative by drawing attention to the variety of victims, not only young white women, but a whole lot of people who are facing harassment on a regular basis, but also perpetrators. Now, when asked about their projects, the collective stated that they aim at sensibilisering, which is something like making people a bit more sensible about street harassment, right? And they originally aimed at perpetrators. And I think this sensibilisering, this like creating sensibility, could be understood as, in the best case scenario, a making strange of the world, a bracketing or temporary suspension of hegemonic norms that allows us to question the phenomenon. And I'd like to focus here on the embodied dimension, right? Or what Adams would call the stop and think, the arrest of habitual movement that pursues, deliberately or not, a specific goal. Beyond the examples, walking across the city, lighting a cigarette, throwing a ball. And so I've mentioned, I think, the author who theorizes this stopping it's very well, right? She focuses on the involuntary acts, so-called acts of the body, as well as the agential force of material objects, which can lead to breaks and interruptions. And this arrest, of course, might be the aim of the posters, right? We might stop because we read something on the wall and we might like halt to in order to finish reading it. But it might also be coincidental. It might be due to the fact that the poster is hanging at the bus stop or hanging at a busy square where people are hanging out. Whatever the reason is for the initial break, our gaze follows the lines, try to read it, and take in what is being communicated. And I think this first aspect of the temporality of posters is quite important, right? As our bodies stop to move, our eyes start to read it, fixating us, however shortly, in the place respective to the text. Now, what we could think of those posters as the interpolative act in which a police officer yells, "Hey, you," they are, of course, posters and they're silent. They are more like traffic signs with, quoting from Sartre, frozen voices, end of quote. And their critical potential only works insofar as we are reading creatures. At the same time, and in contrast to, for instance, chants at a protest, these painted online are physical objects and last after their makers have come together. Their temporality is thus different from physical gatherings. They depend on the zeal of the metropolitan cleaning of surfaces, but their effect is also spread out over time as paths by will read them at very different moments. And I think this is the second aspect of the temporality in posters, right? Read at different times by different people. Now, this account of the temporality, it doesn't yet get us to like a critical moment necessarily, right? Because I think for us to talk about critique, we need to consider some kind of denaturalization of social dynamics, in this case of street harassment. I don't think that always happens with regard to the perpetrators, but in an interview at some point, the collective refers to given anecdotes that they walk past one of the posters and hear a father tell their child, probably a daughter, that like pointing at the poster that girls should be left alone. And I think that this is more likely to happen, right? That in opposition to the expectation that the street is a place of harassment, the poster and the parents, which functions as mouthpiece for a child who does not yet read, reinforces a competing set of normative expectations. The streets are a place where we are left alone. And of course, like the parent knows very well, I mean, they don't know the statistics perhaps, but they know very well that it will be the case that a child will be harassed, right? The likelihood is very high that his daughter will be harassed at some point on the streets at Brussels. So I think what happens in that kind of moment is that there's really the inculcation of a competing set of normative expectation that leads to the situation that when the child is going to be harassed at some later age in her life, the shock will be even bigger, that it will be even more of a confrontation and possibly like a critical moment, so to speak. And I put a quote up there from Terry Eagleton about how kids are like the best kind of theorists, exactly because they engage in this kind of denaturalization of social relationships. Now, the story of the father and the child is kind of like the happy version of what's happening, right, in reaction to these posters. And I think that very often the response to the posters, the kind of arresting movements, might be of a very different nature. So, for instance, in a number of cases, the L from less has been replaced by a B, meaning that the poster states the very opposite of what they ask people to do. So as much as I subscribe to the aim of challenging these deeply entrenched social interactions of street harassment, I also want to acknowledge that there is a variety of different responses to these posters. And I want to connect this observation with the one pertaining to their temporality, right? Their temporality is dispersed through time. Because I think what I left out so far is that our response to these posters is in part shaped by the response that we think others will have to them as well. By realizing, in other words, that others walk past these posters just as we do as well. So we have to return to their status as public, right? As being there visible to other people. And I think that this is where we can draw on a certain account of seriality in his critique of dialectical reason, where he distinguishes between serial praxis, quoting as the praxis of the individual insofar he's a member of the theories, and as a praxis of the whole series, this is the one, first one, and then the common praxis, the other one, which is group action. And then the latter designates a group in which members self-consciously pursue a collective aim. And in Arendtian terms, we could call this action in concert, right? Where people come together in order to change the conditions under which they live. Now, the former, the indirect gatherings, the serial praxis, concerns a collectivity that lacks such a self-conscious pursuit of a collective real goal, and is instead only united in its relationship to an object and what Sartre calls the materialized effects of the actions of others. Now, Sartre, of course, developed this concept of seriality to account for a social class within capitalist societies. And as many of you might probably know, Iris Marandong has also taken it up to think about women, right? Women as a seriality, as a serial group, sorry. Where a series, I'm quoting Iris Marandong, is a collective whose members are unified passively by the relations their actions have to material objects and practical inner histories, end of quote. So what Sartre and Young and others stress is the constitution of a collective that is not defined by interpersonal relationships, nor by a shared collective goal, but only in relation to material objects and materialize and affects a lot of people's action, material objects, such as posters and street graffiti, and the other semi-predictable and quasi-immutable aspects of urban life, including street harassment, as well as the various precautions taken against it. We're gonna skip this. So Sartre of course talks about urban life as being the mode of life that occasions isolated behavior in everyone, right? So this is a mode of life occasioned by the clumping together of behavioral patterns by individuals acting under conditions of scarcity. The city is the conglomerate of physical objects and the behavior of people in which each is interchangeable with others. Sartre is mostly describing the very mundane activities of buying a newspaper and running a bus. And through these activities, each tries to isolate themselves from others. And in the course of doing so, they produce a city that is the milieu for others to likewise isolate themselves. And isolation here should not be understood in an absolute sense, right? But it's suspending the relationship of reciprocity. So in isolation becomes for and through everyone, including for him and for others, the real social product of cities. End of quote. And then, of course, there is this moment in which a serial group can flip over into an extra group that engages in action, right? So the group of people who's waiting in line for the bus, they can, if they keep waiting long enough and they get agitated, they might identify a common goal and start to riot. Now, this very possibility of a serial group that transforms into a group infusion is lacking in indirect gatherings, where people are not in physical proximity, and the gathering is blocked from developing relationships of reciprocity and collective action. And Sartre illustrates this kind of gathering with listening to the radio. I listen to the radio, and as I listen, I respond to what is being said. I might feel annoyance or frustration, gesticulate or shake my head, or in a more cooling manner, I might feel impassioned or touched and nod my head. And these sensations that are very heavily emotional, they're mediated, they very clearly coincide with the knowledge that other people also listen to the podcast. And I think that this is really important. So for how I read Sartre is that there's a lot of attention for all these negative kind of emotions in a response to something that is outside of us that presuppose the presence of someone else who's also relating to that and our knowledge of someone relating to that in a variety of different manners. Mm-hmm. Now, Sartre, of course, articulates that in somewhat of a dialectical manner, but I think it's really useful that he actually talks about the emergence of what he calls indignation, ironical laughter, impotent anger, fascination, enthusiasm, the need to communicate with others, collective fear, etc. And while he talks about the radio, I think it also applies, for instance, to those posters that you saw just a little bit ago. And this is particularly important because I think the Arendtian account, sometimes it overlooks this kind of like conflict or more like negative emotions in the formation of a group. And Sartre, in his account of serial groups, provides a really important corrective into this. So I believe that Sartre's discussion of seriality with regards to the radio can very helpfully illustrate the kind of indirect gathering effectuated by the posters. Like the individual listener, the experience of the passerby plays out in the tension between directly relating to the content of the posters, the anticipation of anonymous others responding to it differently, and experiencing oneself as exactly such an anonymous others for others who are walking past this poster. The passerby is called upon by these posters exactly in their object-like status of the passerby that is interchangeable with others. And the effective response involves the abstract position of others vis-a-vis the poster's content. The final slide. So I think you can helpfully paraphrase Sartre's description of the seriality constituted by the radio to talk about those posters, right? So Sartre here is distinguishing between those who agree, those who waver, and those who disagree. Here's what he's saying, here's what I'm making say. In and through these posters, others, namely the supporters of the denunciation of gender-based violence, influence others, the waverers, the undecided. But this influence is itself serial. What is not serial, of course, is the political action of those making and pasting posters. Since everyone reads from the position of the other, and as other, and because it affects itself as other. It is other for those who reject the movement which inspires it, both as expressing truth in others and as action from others. It is also, sorry, it is other for the waiters who listen to it already as the opinion of others, namely of those omnipresent others who surreptitiously intervene in the public space, the public perspective, and who are influenced by the mere fact that this position has the power to propagate itself publicly. And finally, it is other for those who support the feminist movement, in that for everyone in isolation, it is backed up by the approval of others, those who share his opinion, and by its effects on the waivers. And maybe just in concluding, I think there's two things that are really important here, right? First of all, Sarko talks about the radio, but we're talking about posters in the public space. So there's more possibility to intervene with these posters, right? And just to illustrate the kind of anticipation of another, in the wake of these posters, graffiti emerged all over town, right? And one of the graffitis that was used stated, leave the white male, leave the white straight cis man alone. And I think it's a funny intervention because it anticipates this very common objection to leave the girls alone, maybe what about all the guys, right? So I think in contradistinction to the radio, there's way more possibility to negotiating what is being stated in these posters. And then the second thing that we see in this quote is that I don't want to say that there's assembly and then there's serial groups. I think these are very much in a clear relationship to one another, right? We cannot understand these posters without the assembly, without the collective action that gave rise to them. That's it. Thank you for going on the line.